You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. And this is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with, let's see, we've got all these really excellent underwriters, Second Skin Naturals, and change from here today. The Copper Man, that's who we usually have. We so appreciate our people who back us up. And so here we go. And the Kauai Store.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Pono Pies, dedicated to restoring breadfruit as a major food crop in Hawaii. Gluten, dairy, and GMO-free. Delicious Pono Pies, available at health food stores throughout Hawaii. PonoPies.com, 808-283-3718.
Ke ala nu'ukia, KKCR. KKCR's mission statement. O KKCR ka hui leki o ku o ko'a no Kauai. He hui leki o kaiaulu e pae pae ia ai e ka lehu lehu a e ho'olele ana me ka ho'olaha ole. KKCR is Kauai's independent radio station, a community radio station supported by the people and broadcasting without commercials. Nā pahuhopua KKCR, the goals of KKCR. E ho'olu i ka hoi, e a oaku, a e ho'ohau olihoi i nā hoa ho'olohe. To encourage, to teach, and to also cause enjoyment in the listeners. E mālama, e ho'omau, a e ho'olau le apu i nā mea a me kanohona Hawaii. To care for, to perpetuate, and to celebrate Hawaiian customs and lifestyle. Ho ike i ka nani a kea o ko ka ko kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu ku waho. Showcase the broad beauty of our community and the outside community. He kahua o KKCR no nā leo a me nā mele laha loa pū no me ka laha ole. O ke ke kahu foundation, ka mea e ho o holo ai ia mau papahana leki o. KKCR is a platform for voices and songs both well-known and underrepresented. The Ke Kahu Foundation facilitates these radio programs.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. How are you doing, Marshall?
I'm doing fine, Felicia. How's your day?
Pretty good. You know, has this been such a busy week?
One thing after another?
One thing after another, all kinds of really good things, all kinds of things with lots of purpose. And we were just listening to the mission statement in both Hawaiian and English, Olelo, and in English. And something I'm really enjoying is how much ground the language is gaining. And I understand about half of what I hear when somebody is speaking in Hawaiian. I know a lot of the words. I don't put them all together all correctly, but
that's not bad, really. You actually understand about half of what you're hearing.
I understand about half of what I'm hearing,
oh,
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, it's a very context-sensitive language,
right.
And the nuances of sound are really important. But one thing that I think is great is that there are, free language lessons. In fact, I think, you know, you helped me with my website. I think you even put two of those programs on the learning resource page there, you know.
That's right. Look under resources, education, and scroll down a bit. You'll see wonderful links to Hawaiian language resources.
Right, on the Felicia Cowden, I don't want to even say .com. I mean, I don't make anything off that website, but just that, like, you can just sit there and teach yourself things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, when my children were little, there was a game called, a TV show called Blue's Clues. And it was like a, you know, always getting little hints and things like that. And, you know, the language, the Olelo, is almost like the secret code, because there is so much that is unfolding. And it's been like hidden in plain sight all this time, as in written and in the songs and in the different pieces. And now that there is the internet and more and more free language, like even 2 years ago, you couldn't go in and get free language lessons online. I've been watching for that. So now, I mean, there's more and more free sources to learn all different kinds of things, by the way. But it's making a really big political difference.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, looking at Hawaiian history, but also people researching their own topics.
Right. So they're able to look back at primary documents of history that were written in Hawaiian that until recent times were actually ignored or glossed over in favor of the English versions.
Yeah, and even just like, you know, maybe 5% of what was written in that window of time was written in English. So it's like being able to have access to 5% of the knowledge from that window of time.
Right.
But even things like street names and, you know, there's all kinds of clues and pieces all over the place. So there's a lot of learning on that. And I'm just having more and more opportunity to be able to see, you know, what's up and what's going on. I saw that, like, for example, today, Bianca Asaki, who, and then there's another attorney in there, too, that I just don't know as well. I'll see if I can pull that up real quickly. On Maui, they won a court decision that reversed a quiet title on a family's land, a Hawaiian family's land, and Maui Land Company had quiet titled that land and taken it. And even though it was resisted, I don't have the article right in front of me yet.
That's Kuleana lands?
I don't know if it was Kuleana or simply their land, but when you quiet title land, quiet titling land happens a lot. And sometimes that happens when there are a lot of heirs on a piece of property. It's not a singular owner. So you can just put in the paper, hey, in small print, who you're looking for, and that if that land isn't claimed, that it will be, they're just asking for the landowners to surface. And, you know, how many of us really look in the fine print of the classified section? You know, you have to know to look there to look for it, you know, and hopefully somebody sees you. But so it was the Second Circuit Court, I guess this was Friday. So it was Mikila Land Company, and they were taking, oh, here it is, a Kuleana parcel, 3.4-acre Kuleana parcel. And so Bianca Asaki and Lance Collins, who's the other attorney, Lance Collins, I don't know him personally, but I do know Bianca, and she's helped us on our show before, but they appealed it, and it had to go all the way back to a basic trial, and, you know, is a four-day trial, and they had six witnesses testify, and very often, typically in the past, there's a new little phrase I've learned, administrative bias. Very often, you know, the courts don't admit certain pieces of evidence, or, you know, the works against people. But in this case, this family, they were able to claim their land. And so they've gotten it. So that's really great.
So that's a relatively small parcel within a larger parcel that's been bought by somebody. So now that person has, I'm asking a question. Has a parcel with a piece that's not theirs. Is that what it looks like at this point?
Are you looking at the same article?
No. I'm asking you a question. I don't know
if it's part of a larger piece. It is a place that Maui Land Company had put, water pipe underneath.
Mm-hmm.
They put a water pipe underneath and then quiet titled the lands above it.
Okay.
And so this didn't go quite in that much detail, but they got their land back.
Okay. All right. So it's a precedent.
I don't even know if it's a precedent setting.
Okay.
Precedent means that, I mean, it's just that it happened.
I
don't know that it would influence other cases. It could.
Right.
It could, actually. I mean, at least what it would do is that if somebody has had a case in the past where they didn't look at it as well, maybe it might encourage somebody else and a new family to try harder.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that is one element. And I guess when I'm looking at these different things, like tomorrow, I'm going to go to court regarding the Waikoko. Is it called really Wailua Nui Ahuanu, you know, the property that is behind the Coco Palms Resort. So that state piece of land that's back there where people have been arrested for trespassing. I went to the court case where they denied the right of the Coco Palms development to deny the people the right to be on the land because they said they're not sure who really holds the title.
Okay, so that was not a determination of rightful title. That was just saying, we don't know yet, you can't kick these people out.
You can't kick these people out, you know. We need to know who has rightful title. And I am not sure tomorrow what all will be determined at court, but it's a 2 o'clock time tomorrow, and I think a number of people are going, and I was going to go also. It'll be an interesting piece because that is a royal patent claim. And the royal patent title comes from certainly prior to the United States or even the territory of Hawaii. You know, it's from the Hawaiian Kingdom times. And so we'll see where that goes. But that is... That would be what could be considered a precedent-setting case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting because as we've explored on this program before, that we looked that up, and that property that prior to these men and the families that are living on the property laying claim to that property saying, hey, this is our Kuleana rights, the Kupule and the Kamoali'i lines, We're claiming that we are beneficiaries of that. Beneficiary is the wrong word. That they would be able to benefit from being part of that Kuleana. So that is the claim, and that's what's called an alloidial title. It's a new word that I got to learn. Alloidial title means you can't sell it or give it away.
Oh, okay.
And so people would argue whether that's an alloidial title or not. I did try and do the best I could on a title search of that. And it kind of goes back to a time where it's really hard to know what happened. At one point, Lihui Plantation had it, and I'm not sure how they got it or why it transferred from Lihui Plantation to the state. But it didn't transfer to the resorts. It has had... an incredibly cost-free lease. You know, most of the time it's been between the taxes and the lease rent on that almost 15 acres has been about between $5,000 and $6,000. Now it's gone up. It's not quite $8,000 for both the leases and the tax combined. But when you think about that level of acreage on basically public land, that has high cultural past, cultural history on it, that maybe that wouldn't be a bad piece to, you know, have stewarded by people of the lineal descent. So those people of lineal descent are certainly saying they want it.
So do you know, are there many royal patent lands on Kauai?
I am sure that there is a good number of it. I don't have that website up right now. You know, it could set a lot of precedent.
Right, right. If one parcel of royal patent lands is determined to belong to the people that receive that title or that were the descendants of them, it would only stand to reason that if that documentation exists for parallel parcels, the same would be true.
I think you have to have that physical piece of paper.
Yeah.
If I have a knock on my listener, and you know that better than I do, please call 826-7771 because I am not a land use attorney, and I don't really have that wired. But anyway, so that case is tomorrow, and I think that we have a caller. Do we have they want to come on? Okay, good. Thank you for being an Akamai listener. Aloha, you're on the air.
Well, hi, Felicia, Alan.
Hey, so do you know about this? You're pretty smart.
Well, I was having a discussion this morning with George Christensen, who is our chairman of our board, Kikyo Land Company, about the very subject, and he said that unless taxes are paid, there's got to be a proof of paying taxes over all the years, or the patent becomes null and void, is what George said.
Okay, well, that's an interesting point. Now, the state owns, they say they own the lands, and then I'm sure that because the taxes are so light, I mean, they're $1,100 at present a year. It was, you know, hundreds of dollars for most of this time. You know, the hotel would have paid the taxes. I mean, certainly the young men who are laying claim to the land, they haven't been the ones to be paying the taxes. I know that paying taxes relative to Kuleana lands, that's how things get quiet titled, is somebody starts picking up the taxes for somebody else. But so that's what you heard for royal patent lands. That
well,
the
it was it maybe not necessarily cocoa palms, but it might be that he was referring to Zuckerberg has some, you know, his property has Kulianas on it. And we have some on our Kikiola property,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
So he said, George said, check the records of taxes. Who thought they owned it at such a time that did they pay the taxes?
Well, like this family, the Kapu family on Maui, that
yeah,
just won their land title on Kuleana lands, I would presume that they were not paying taxes on that property. You know, because it has been, you know, they're like fifth generation, and there was really no emphasis on that. It's called Mikila Land Company and Maui Land Company, and, you know, the Pioneer Mill.
Oh, sure.
had that, and so, you
then
know, it'll be really,
it.
Is yeah, and so this would be really interesting to see, because the article that I'm reading doesn't actually describe the land taxes, but I would just guess that.
Right. It'd be interesting to find out what the county says tomorrow.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Now, it's going to be, I don't know if that's county, but it's the district court. So, so here it said, Kapu could trace the family claim back to the original 1848 awardee of the parcel known as the Land Commission Award. It's supposed to be that those Kuleana lands don't have a tax on it, you know, or it's like $25 or something to that effect. It's, but that's, an interesting point. And, but so these people on Maui, they did win their court case. They had to bring it back. It had been even turned down in 2007 in the Intermediate Court of Appeals.
Have we seen it in the public press, like Garden Island?
I am looking at the Maui News.
Oh, okay.
And this is today, June 27th, is the court decision happened today. And so if somebody was looking it up, it says jury rules in favor of family and quiet title dispute. And I will, I'm just going to post it right on my my Facebook page. I might have already done it, but I'm just going to do it again.
Well, so I'll people be very, very anxious tomorrow to hear what you find about our project, our place.
Okay, yeah.
Good for you. Thank you so much for doing what you're doing.
Hey,
here.
And I want to thank you, Alan Faya, for you are a large landowner, or you are part of a family of large landowning, and all the work that I have done with you seems like you really are trying to do your best to have a good use of the land for everybody.
Well, sure. And, of course, you know that we're aiming to have Syngenta out of there and start working on remediation of that contaminated, you know, our old sugar lands.
Right, yes. And the old sugar lands, like, it's really important that the reuse of the lands are things that are actually bioremediating so that it's helpful. I mean, that's the ideal,
well,
is to put a crop or something
the
in there that would be helping.
That's important,
it.
I think, is once we clean up the land, we go back to talking about organic growing, garden growing for the island.
Yeah, growing organic food.
Right.
Yeah.
But we want to clean it up, so it might be something like industrial hemp that's noted for cleaning bad soil. So we put that into the old sugar land and clean up the soil and take it out and put in the garden.
Yeah, that would be good. Now, I've read in the paper that there is somebody taking over Syngenta's lease. Isn't that correct? There's like another company that's going to pick it up.
The Chinese did buy Syngenta, and they have to come back to us to renegotiate the lease because with the new the new owners of Syngenta, if we don't work out the lease, they're out.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that, and I know that there is a growing interest from a number of different agricultural efforts to be utilizing land in a more bioremediating way. So thank you so much for calling in and sharing.
Thank you for being on top of everything. Who is your partner today you're talking with?
Marshall is...
Oh, Marshall, yeah. I got to talk to Marshall.
Hello, Alan.
Hello, Marshall. Hey, look, you guys, keep up the program. I didn't mean to break in, but...
No, we like it. So thank you so much.
Yeah, have a great one, you folks. I'll be listening.
Okay, thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you, Felicia. This is Andrew Saharnas. You know, let me turn off the radio.
Thank you. So Andrew Saharnas is going to be joining us in a moment as soon as he's ready.
Now
back.
I hear a lot
okay.
more.
Okay.
But, I just want to acknowledge you folks for taking up this issue because land tenure, and probably especially so in Hawaii, is such an important area for the sovereignty of all the people. And I grew up with a very keen sense of geography. I had a love affair as a young pre-college youth with an atlas in my folks' very meager library. And I used to look at that for hours and hours over and over and every single shred of it. But anyway, so... examining the old print, like... All the old Hawaiian print is such a treasure trove of information. Plus, it also helps increase the awareness and appreciation and the practice and to people to learn the Hawaiian language. But the Hawaiians were extremely, you know, as you probably know, very highly literate people during the kingdom days.
Right.
The most literate people in the world. But the as far as the court case goes, you know, that's a very important case. And I would hope that, I don't know, perhaps the ACLU could be involved in it, but to argue it from the point of view of that this is Hawaiian stewardship rights, that this land is sacred, and we have to present the full legal angle that exists as, you know, an American practice then and now, and also just that that, you know, the Hawaiians believe that the Creator made everything, and we, you know, the Caucasians came here, and with the reality and the concept and practice of that we decide, we humans make and decide everything. And but anyways, but along that line, you know, it's good to present the it's good to take the higher ground for the that Hawaiians, they have a right to be on the land, you know. And that's all I wanted to say about that. And I just want to comment on your insights into the internet, and, you know, there's all kinds of great free information. That's wonderful. But at the same time, you know, I'm a scholar of media. Media is extensions of human faculties. And I have books by the leading scholars in America critiquing all the mass media, including computers and all that internet. And I recently read an interview with Ralph Nader in a widely known alternative monthly publication. I think it was The Sun. And he said, you know, he made some comments about the internet and politics and, you know, campaigning. And he said that these are his words exactly, or more or less, that, you know, using the internet and computers to conduct democracy, he said it's push-button democracy, and it doesn't work. And then he also said that there's way too much clutter online. You know, I mean, a lot of it is just people sending information or, you know, whatever to each other. And, of course, you know, a great deal of what is conducted online, presented, and the activity is solely for just entertainment purposes, you know.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, but maybe I just don't see that.
Yeah, but anyways, but I'm presenting, I'm just quoting what Ralph Nader said about that, you know. And but anyways, you folks have a great show, and it's good to push the dialogue, expand the parameters of the dialogue, you know, expand people's minds, and present things in a new light. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you for calling.
Yes, my pleasure.
Aloha.
Aloha.
And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea with Felicia and Marshall on Kauai Soapbox. And the call-in number is 826-7771. And I appreciate the callers that we have had. And when we are talking about different things going on, one more piece on the cultural Hawaiian cultural element, and then I want to talk a little bit more about farming. There's a number of, actually two more Hawaiian pieces, though. All right, the Namahoy. I went down there Sunday. I was really happy to see it pull into dock, and I have an extra attachment because a number of the people on there I've known since they were children, and I'm just so happy to see their joy and, you know, all the beautiful things that are underway with that. But even right there, you know, the cultural elements that are unfolding are not a performance. You know, we're used to seeing things over the years in a performance, you know, beautiful performances, whether it's May Day or some blessing or something or another. But these are just coming authentic and sincere, like in the gratitude pule prayers of returning safely, the welcoming back,
the multi-generational elements of it. And so it was really nice, kind of a small crowd down there.
And she had been away 3 years, right?
Well, that is the Hokulea. So okay. The Namahoy is our own island's canoe, our voyaging canoe from here, and it's 20 years in the making, and its first time really leaving the near shore waters was to go over to Oahu for last week, and then, you know, it's been gone about a week or so, and then coming back. So anyway, they got back, and I saw that. Another piece I'm just going to make a comment on is I did go to the Department of Hawaiian Homelands meeting at Kapaa Elementary School that evening. And there was definitely more staff from Department of Hawaiian Homelands in the room, or people that were their contractors or support staff. I counted 4 people that attended that looked like they have Hawaiian bloodline that weren't employed to be there. And there was about 4 of us that don't have any Hawaiian bloodline that were in there. I went in and I live streamed it. And I thought, well, maybe they all came this morning, you know, because it was in, it also happened that morning, Friday morning. And I talked to some non-Hawaiian people who went. And they said, no, it was almost an empty room. And I had asked how they put out the word, how they get the word out. And they send out a postcard about a month ago, you know, to the people who are on the list. And
what list?
The Department of Hawaiian Homelands, like to their beneficiaries or the people waiting to have a home.
Okay.
So people sign up for a Hawaiian home, a DHHL home. And I've been paying a lot of attention to this because, like, in the general plan update, it didn't seem like the Department of Hawaiian Homelands had really had a very big voice in it. Certainly, like, where they want to move the sewage treatment plant is onto Department of Hawaiian Homelands lands. You know, it seems like DHHL lands are treated like public lands for the whole common good. And, you know, there's not enough development for the Hawaiian people, and then there weren't very many people there. So I appreciate the people who did tune in, because I did do a live stream. Most people didn't know about it, but it doesn't get put out there to the larger Hawaiian community or just the general community. And I was called. I only knew about it that day. And somebody said, can you please go and film it? So
you were requested to be there.
I was requested to be there.
Yeah. And what's the interest, or do you know, of the other non-Hawaiian people that were there?
Well, I think the issue of justice or lack thereof to the Hawaiian people is really an issue that affects all of us.
Right.
You know, we're basically all in the same canoe, and that is the most core host in this host culture. And so if, like Martin Luther King said, a threat to justice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
So your sense is that non-Hawaiians that were in the room were there in support or to be in alliance with the Hawaiians who are hoping to who are on the list to get homes?
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, because I happen to know the other people who are in there, and it is people who are watching the lack of putting the lands out there. It was people who were very involved in the general plan update. And, you know, the Hawaiian element seemed like it was a PS in that, you know, a postscript in it. It was called heritage. That's what they called it. Heritage planning, or, you know, that was under in a group that said heritage resources. That was called heritage resources, which also makes it sound like history. And so the concern was, is, you know, it almost felt like, how do we keep it interesting for the visitor industry? It did not feel to me like it did justice to, you know, resolving a very big element of what is our land use issues and how we have a rightful treatment, you know, of that community. So it affects everybody. It's not just that one community. And, you know, watching the water elements, and I, you know, I'm not going to play it quite yet. I'm going to play it a little bit. One of my friends, Kumu Kuaiiki, she has hula, and she's a master lei maker, and she's got diabetes to the point where it's hard for her to have mobility. So otherwise, I would bring her in here. But I went down, and I pretty much, like, recorded a show with her because she has so much interesting things to say. So I have a number of pieces that, you know, I'll play a few of those pieces, like when she's talking about Hawaiian displacement, or, you know, we talked about a number of things from the Hokulea to, you know, we talked about the cocoa palms. We talked about living with disability. We talked about suicide and depression. You know, I couldn't help myself. I just sat and talked with her like it was a show here, like that I recorded somewhere else. So I intend to play a few of those pieces that I think are pretty interesting. But when we were talking about the Department of Hawaiian Homelands and these things being, it affects all of us, there is sort of this little potential windfall of money that might be coming to the island from the Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And it is a last-minute opportunity. It's certainly been shared with our political leaders, I know, because I personally made sure. I mean, I'm sure they learned some other way, too, but flushed that information to them.
Mm-hmm.
About this opportunity that could bring quite a bit of money here. I don't know really what the fine print says on it, but one of the core pieces that I think is very interesting, and actually if people, I am not, by no means the person who's managing it, but people could call me after the show at 652-4363 or communicate with me on Facebook or something like that, because I could give people information or help get them to people who are somewhat managing this particular opportunity. But I know, Marshall, that you know about it. The best of my understanding when I read the brochure on it is that it's called a rural development grant. And it is targeting what they call socially disadvantaged groups. And most of what would be considered our minority population here is determined to be a socially disadvantaged group. So it's trying to find and ferret out the people who don't easily have an easy time with writing up grants, working on all the paperwork part of it. But it's trying to build the infrastructure and the food capacity in a rural area.
Okay, so basically rural infrastructure and agricultural concerns of various kinds. How can we beef up our island production of food and gain an increased degree of self-sufficiency?
That's right. And it's, you know, it was interesting when it's looking at they call it key barriers to equitable delivery of programs, and what their concerns are, like what the big concern is right now when we are having a very aggressive anti-illegal immigrant policy and wanting to bounce out you know, a lot of these people who are here without papers. That's what the Italians were called, WOPs. And my background is Sicilian Italian, so it was, you're a WOP, you know, if you don't have papers.
Without papers.
Without papers.
Is that right?
WOP stands for without papers.
Wow, WOP is an acronym.
Yeah, it means without papers. So oh, they'd say, hey, that WOP. So that's where WOP means Italian. They'd say Dago or WOP, but WOP is without papers.
I heard that there's a couple of people got arrested in Kalalau that were WOPs.
Is that right?
Yeah, no ID, no papers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this means without immigration papers or
okay.
whatever.
All right.
But and you know, we're seeing, you know, people number of people are being deported from the communities in Hawaii that have maybe lived here for a very long time. But so as they are not wanting people who aren't documented, undocumented workers, like Louisiana, California, some of these places that are heavy agriculture, they can't keep their factories going. They can't. There's, I read an article of $13 million worth of produce having to rot in the field this week in California because mm-hmm. of the lack of ag workers to be able to make it happen.
It's really straightforward. You know, unless we, like, imagine that our food, you know, falls from a basket into the sky, from this in the sky into our supermarket. You've got to realize there's a lot of people working out there hard in the field, and you take them away. What do you expect? The food rots in the field.
Right, and the argument can be, well, they need to pay a very good wage so you can attract American workers. It seems to be hard to attract American workers, you know, almost at any wage on doing that, but
sure, especially that the unemployment rate is down into somewhat normal level now. People are not desperate for jobs,
right? And in particularly in a place like California, those people have to migrate. So it's not like you just go to the job and do it. You're moving, and so your kids are constantly being displaced. There's a very big action on that. So when they're looking at, okay, well, when we are displacing our migrant workers and our non-documented workers, then we don't have anybody to do the harvest. And when we are antagonizing who might be considered our trading partners in Asia, there's that kind of basically came out in this rationale. You know, let's say, where are we going to have the food? We have to increase our rural development. And that at present, well, really 2012, which is when this information, it's a 2017 Rebuild Rural Infrastructure Grant, but the last numbers that they quoted were 2012, that in the whole rural areas, there was 14% of the U.S. population lives in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying it's not just getting the food in the ground, it's having enough strength in the rural areas to have the infrastructure. So it can be water and sewage and all this sort of stuff. But this particular grant stream is seemingly meant for the people more than the governments.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little unclear about that. I you know, I read through this document. It seems kind of short and simple.
What is it you're unclear about?
Well, what all the stipulations of these grants are. I mean, it's a huge amount of money that they're saying is available, you know, a huge amount. And it covers housing, all this sort of stuff, but it has to go in very quickly. And they're looking for shovel-ready work.
Right. Affordable housing, farm worker housing.
Farm worker housing has in here broadband work, I guess, like in a lot of the United States. I don't know that we have such a big broadband mm-hmm. area, but there's all kinds of special projects.
Agricultural cooperatives, food hubs.
Food hubs.
Irrigation systems, mm-hmm. distribution systems, education in new farming techniques, this sort of thing.
Yeah, and so it can flush money through. And so it can flush money through the potential farmers and go to the larger landowners, go to things like the Agribusiness Development Corporation, like where then they have the farmers to put the stuff on the land. So that is encouraging. You know, I kind of hold my breath a little bit because sometimes when things seem too good to be true, that they might be. But
mm-hmm.
but this does seem to be something that's out there. And another one of the big goals is that there is some export crop and, you know, value-added products. Now, export can mean to Oahu. It doesn't mean to France.
Right.
Japan.
So that would be a grant to increase a farmer's capacity to export crops.
Yes. These rural development and investment grants are looking to help the United States, and that would be inclusive of Hawaii, to be able to be producing more of our own food and, you know, producing food so we aren't so dependent on the imported foods.
Right.
And looks like there's an interest in having it be diversified ag and healthy food.
Right. Well, you know, I think that there's an actual sort of common wisdom, growing acceptance of the power of diversified agriculture. You know, it's pretty common knowledge that industrial agriculture is destructive over time, and that monocropping leads to disease and super weeds and that sort of thing. So, not surprised. I mean, I'm happy the USDA has caught on to even the terminology diversified agriculture. But yeah, here we go.
Yeah, so it is, you know, pretty amazing that I mean, I'm so used to not hearing that. So when I'm hearing it, I'm going, really? You really want to give us all this money? But so there is a short timeline on it. If people have a good agriculture idea or where they think they could be helping the collective, they can contact me and I will pass you along the information. In fact, my email is Akamai Mom, because I had a little school called Akamai Learning, AKAMAIMOM, @gmail.com, and just put USDA grant interest and I will send you the information that I have, but then you know, it can help to connect you, because you know, I think that there are more on the northeast side so far that are involved in this, or at least I know more about that group, and we certainly want to be making sure that we are talking about the whole island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so is it just organizations, say just nonprofits or such, that can get involved in this grant, or can individuals actually inquire and potentially benefit as well? Let me get that phone.
You know, I'm not sure. My guess is that, you know, they have to be a part of something that shows economic capacity. But they, you know, it is trying to be an economic development grant. So I don't know. Aloha. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Yes, I would like you to repeat, because I now have paper and pen.
Okay, my email?
No, I got that.
Okay.
But you could repeat that again. I'm more immediately interested in one of your underwriters, I think, was an Ulu person. And Ulu Pie.
Pono Pies.
Oh, no.
Pono, like P-O-N-O. Pono Pies.
Pono Pie. And is that using Ulu?
I think so. Do you want me to play the ad? I mean, the underwriter thing?
That is what they said, Ulu.
Ulu.
And they had a telephone number that I wanted to call.
Okay, I'm going to play it. All right. Are you going to listen?
Yes.
Pono Pies, dedicated to restoring breadfruit as a major food crop in Hawaii.
Turn your radio to...
Oh. Dairy and GMO-free. Delicious Pono Pies. Available at health food stores throughout Hawaii. PonoPies.com, 808-283-3718.
283-3718. PonoPies.com.
Yeah, that sounded...
Okay, can you turn your radio off?
Yes. So that sounded like a group of people that should be looking into that.
That's true, right? Yeah. I mean, and you know how this is going to be working is it's going to be like a cooperative. These aren't competitive people coming in for the grant. I think that the way the overall grant will be written it will be something to the effect of, as far as I know, I am not the person who's managing this. I'm just relaying that I went and heard about this, is that, you know, the broad goal is to be able to help the resilience of Kauai and to be, you know, to regain and retain its food production capacity. So whether that is, you know, having the infrastructure, whether that's food hubs or, you know, distribution element or education to be good at being able to do it, you know, I mean, there's so many ways that we can be addressing it. We have to just have the creativity of figuring out how to do it. Mm-hmm. So I know that the college and, you know, different people have been given this information, mm-hmm. and it's being thought about, but it has to be thought about in a hurry. Sometimes the government has some money that they got to get rid of quickly. Right. It's like the end of that funding window. Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's what that is. So let's hope for the best.
Yeah. Well, I'll take that food, that ULU number, and give them a call and say, wherever you are, you might like to look into this, because it's statewide, I'm assuming.
It is statewide.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Only applicable to eligible rural areas, wouldn't that be the case?
Yes, it is rural, so it would be not most of Oahu.
Yeah, right.
But I wonder
if Alan could use that for his hemp remediation project.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. If that's the one on the west side.
Yeah, right. That's
yes.
The guy you had on earlier.
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Oh, well, and I think there's an Alan who is wanting to do that. But yes, for Alan Faya, I don't know that he knows about that grant. So, Alan, if you're listening, I will tell you about that later. But a farmer who would be wanting to do it could utilize his land for that. I hate to say it, but white men, and Alan is a white men aren't their target.
No,
it is
as beneficiaries.
I mean, as beneficiaries, but if
right.
if
they do hire people, Alan is in that position of hiring.
Yeah, or if there is a farmer who wants to utilize the land for that, it's called the socio disadvantaged group.
Right.
So people who have a struggle, Alan could facilitate their ability
right.
to utilize right. his land,
right.
and that the money would go through the recipient that would, you know, be a mutual benefit to everybody involved.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like the Kealia Farms people.
The Kealia Farms people would be another excellent example. And anybody, like the, right now, there is a lot of land available through the Agribusiness Development Corporation, and Sandy Katoklute is the Kauai rep on that. And she's so nice. She'll help people fill out their application and all of that. And, you know, it was said there's a lot of water in the ocean. And so the canoes that are on the surface of the water aren't competitive with each other for the water in the ocean. You know, that this is trying to have everybody rise together
mm-hmm.
and to have, you know, more production for the people.
Mm-hmm. And I would wonder if the Hawaiian Homes people, like in Anahola, could do something.
I know that people within the Hawaiian community are listening in on it. I personally gave the information to the Department of Hawaiian Homelands Administration,
right.
and they said that they distributed that to their organizations around the islands.
Great.
And, you know, I gave it to OHA. I mean, just because that's what I gave to, I know who got at least what I gave it to. And I tried to go down my list of most everybody that I could think of, from big to small, certainly our political leaders,
right.
because they're the ones who really have the knowledge about how to disperse it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was sort of a last-minute effort. Hey, and if I can give a plug to KKCR, the reason why I was called early on in this is because somebody who listens to KKCR called me and said, "Hey, right. where do you go
or
with
said,
this?"
Said Akamai Mama.
So, yeah. So it's out there and it's going, and it seems to be
great.
An atypical opportunity.
Yeah. Well, and I hope Walter Ritty and all of those people are on it.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I haven't sent it to them, so I should send it to them.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello, Felicia.
Hello?
Felicia. I dropped him.
Uh-oh, oh, you accidentally got hung up on. Please call back.
Please call back. I was going to say it's Gray. Gray, please call back. I'm so sorry about that.
Oh, can you tell? You can just dial him back. Okay, so actually, Gray, I didn't send it off to Gray.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
Yeah, Gray would be a great person. Yeah, I mean, I just was trying. So, Gray, are you there?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Gray.
Hey, and turn your radio off.
No worries.
So, yeah, you would be an excellent. You do the
gleaning.
You're a big piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what?
What's that?
Just even right now, we're going to make sure you're put on this.
What I want to tell people is that food security on this island is only a phone call away. What you can do on this island in order to make sure that the most vulnerable people on this island get good food is call me. I will come and pick the fruit. I will give it away. I will make sure that folks that need it the most get it in the hands of. The small children on this island that need good fruit, if you have any wasted fruit, any fruit that doesn't get picked, call me.
So, Gray, what's your phone number?
My number is 808-333-6823. Every single Wednesday, I give out 7,000 pounds of food at the Church of the Pacific.
In Princeville?
Yes. And I want that to be a higher percentage of fresh fruits and vegetables. Last year, 17,500 pounds of fresh fruits and vegetables that I was able to pick and give away.
Gray,
so anybody that has a good fruit tree in the back there, please call me at 808-333-6823. I will come and give that food into the hands of people that need it immediately. I believe in food security.
Yes, and that's one of the things that the grant that we're discussing is largely about, food security. There's a lot
Which
of concern
is why
for
I
that.
Called you.
Yeah.
Have you given any thought to what it would look like to expand your program?
Yeah, because like you do it mostly on the North Shore. So what if somebody lives in Kekaha, that you're not going to drive down there?
And let's suppose you have some resources to do this. Suppose it's no longer volunteer.
As a matter of fact, resources have come to this island. If you want to contact Kaylee at the Village Harvest Program at Malama Kauai, their goal is to have 5 gleaning teams that collect fruit all over the island.
Can you look
and
up that
give
number?
It away in the places, the after school programs, the charter school, Hawaiian charter schools that are going on, any place at all that children are needy and need food, we're happy to make sure that they get good fresh food. Contact Kaylee at the Village Harvest Program at Malama Kauai. Or you can contact me at grayhayden at gmail.com. That's the GRAYHAYTON at gmail.com.
And I'm having Marshall look up Malama Kauai's phone number, unless you have it right.
Please look up the number. Make sure that gets put out a lot.
And
there's
then
a lot of underutilized fruit that trees produce. You see them in your neighbor's yard, they're going to rot. Call us.
And you
and knock on the door.
And the food banks will give you almost retail price for what you turn in. And so you can use that as a a tax...
tax-deductible donation. It goes by pound.
So here's the other big thing, Gray, that I think that people need to know is that your gleaners are trained to not just rob the bottom of the tree of everything, but to take...
One of the things that I have been working on for the last 6 years since I've been on this island is I take the fruit from the top of the tree. You can't reach it, all right? It's going to go to waste. I'll take the fruit from the top of the tree that you will never utilize, and I will get it into the hands that need the most. There's a way to do it that's completely liability-free, and I encourage everybody to look up two laws, all right? The 1995 Good Samaritan Act of Hawaii and the 1996 Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act that was signed into federal law by Bill Clinton. Those laws have a gleaning clause that says me, a gleaner for a nonprofit agency that feeds the hungry, eliminates civil and criminal liability between the homeowner and the gleaner. I would like to say that everything I do is safe and wonderful and beautiful. I have delivered 17,500 pounds of food last year alone of fresh fruits and vegetables. I want to get that up to 1 million pounds a year. But
so,
liability scares everybody. Okay? How do you let someone you know on your property collect fruit to give it away? Well, those laws, and I encourage everybody to look them up, encourage the fact that the gleaning programs to feed the hungry eliminate any liability for gleaners that you know that are serving the community from onto your property.
So thank you for that. And, Marshall, what is the phone number for Malama Kauai?
We have an email address.
You don't have a phone number?
No, we have an email address. It's villageharvest@malamakauai.org.
All right. Yeah. Okay. There's no phone number? Okay.
For...
They should have a phone number for Malama Kauai. There's no phone number? I mean, a lot of people aren't email people. A lot of people aren't going to do an email. Do you know their phone number? You must have it in your phone.
I have Kaylee's personal phone number. She's the director over there, and I don't want to get it out over the air. But if you get a hold of Village Harvest, they've got...
We don't have that. I want to put it out there that they need to have a number.
No, there it is.
Okay, what's the number? Okay, he's going to say the number.
828-0685.
828-0685. Okay.
So, Gray, is that your operation, or do you guys operate separately?
Basically, since I've been on this island, I have been operating independently. I found out about the gleaning laws, and I have been involved with the North Shore Food Pantry at the Church of the Pacific. So what I did is I went out and I researched, I saw, because a lot of people were saying, you can't come on my property without a liability waiver. I found out that liability waivers aren't really worth the paper they're written on.
Okay. All right.
So what I did was I found out about the gleaning laws and the homeowners are actually covered. If they have a reputable person, a gleaner.
Gray, I have to put you on hold because I have to do the top of the hour.
No problem.
I have a. Do you want to hold or?
I'll hold.
Okay. All right. So, thank you. For listening, Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Second Skin Natural. Oh, no, excuse me. Tiki and Niki and Pono Pies for this time in our show. We're talking about... it's all changed on here. I'm sorry. I gotta look here. The Copper Man and Second Skin Naturals. Thank you.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea o ka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
Okay, thank you. And Gray, you're still there?
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds like the homeowner doesn't have to worry. It sounds like you have your own kuleana that you do for some of the schools and for Church of the Pacific, and that Village Harvest from Malama, Kauai at 828-0685. Is that right, Marshall? That they would be good ones to be calling from other parts of the island.
I have an greener, G, with a clean, greener. Since I've been here, I found out when I had the farm boy, raised the farm boy, and when I came out here, I saw a lot of food going to waste. I was lucky enough to get hooked up with the North Shore Food Pantry at the Church of the Pacific. I have been bringing in food every single year since then because I can't stand to see good food go to waste. I'm a farm boy. I've always been a farm boy. This island is the Garden Island. No one ever should go hungry ever on this island. And I've brought my energy to the gleaning program. I thought I was a lone guy until the Village Harvest program got fired up over here from Malama, Kauai. I am now one of potentially five gleaning teams that report their weight to the amount of fruit we bring in every week to Village Harvest at Malama, Kauai.
Okay.
Harvest is an internationally recognized program, and I'm just joining it. I want to bring in as much food as I can, give it all away. There's no commercial profit in this at all. It's strictly community-based and community-oriented, and I'm a spear tip. And Village Harvest is the shaft of the spear, and we're going to make a lot of things go really, really fast here on this island.
So thank you for what you do.
Teams. We run a distribution network that goes from KA to KA with free food. And we're working on it. It's real close. We're very, very close on all this.
So thank you for what you do, and thank you for calling in.
Felicia, you are a voice on this island for what's right, and I want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk about this.
Well, wonderful. Thank you again. And your number
808-333-6823. Please call me if you've got proof. I'll get it into the hands of people that really need it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Felicia.
Aloha.
Have a good day.
Yeah, so that's an example of elements that would come under the umbrella of this larger grant, too, that can be flushing more money at them if they need it. You know, it seems like there's probably an incredible amount of capacity just in the gleaning aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so much food to bring together and... distribute. And, you know, I couldn't help but think when he's talking about the tree high or the fruit high in the tree, like, well, maybe we should prune those trees and get more fruit down low. But I guess that kind of defeats the gleaning purpose. I don't know.
Well, you can get, yeah, they could get picked, but then that's, you know, that's a whole full-on service that is, you know, another piece, like to glean those trees. I mean, to prune the trees. It's a very big task, and so it takes a big skill. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. I have a couple issues. I just heard that man talking about food waste. And I know it's probably ridiculous to even suggest it, but I work in a restaurant, and I see so much waste, it's just unconscionable. It seems like there could be maybe a coalition of people who could go to restaurants and give food that would otherwise be thrown away, perfectly good food that could be given, you know, soup kitchens or something. I don't know. I don't have the whole answer. That's one thing I wanted to say. The other thing is... the homeless issue, I know I've called before to try to talk about it, but we were out of time. I wonder if there was anything mentioned at your meeting. Was it last night with the Hawaiian people? The
DHHL? That was a few nights ago. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Did anyone bring that up? Because that's an ongoing and severe and ever-growing worse problem, and I'm part of it. I am homeless and live in my car, and I have received such horrendous vitriol and cruelty and hatred by people who live in the area who don't want to see anybody sleeping in a car, no matter how clean and quiet and respectful I am. I'm as invisible as I can be. I come late at night. I go out as early as possible. I never get a full night of sleep. And I'm always looking at every light and listening to every noise with one eye open, because it's very hard to live like this and feel safe. So I just want to bring that up, because there are so many people I've seen, so many families and children and single people scratching in the dirt to sleep at night, and it's a horrible problem. I don't know what to do. I don't say that I have answers, but these questions are important, and people are suffering. And you know, are we gonna start looking like LA or New York the way it is?
And if I could jump in a little bit on this, in a discussion that we just were having, and it was actually looking at how to be applying grants and dealing with the housing insecurity. And one of the people who was in the conversation, he is a part of the housing committee, the affordable housing committee, and you know, they say, yeah, it kind of surprised me with that number, but he said over 50% of the beds are basically considered illegal that are on the islands. You know, like, I know that there is fear that goes through me when I help people who are without housing and just let them stay as a guest for a little while, because if you get in trouble for staying as having a guest in the house, you can have your real property tax value goes up. You know, they'll say, well, I don't believe that nobody is paying rent. You know, I mean, it's like how difficult it is. And we are surrounded by people. You know, they say 25% are housing insecure. I mean, I am thankful that you have a car. There are many people I know that don't even have that. So
yes, yes.
I'm not in any way minimizing the challenge that's there of living in your car. It's just that there's that, and even more.
I don't hear you say anything like that, but my question comes then, what can we do in a legislative way to change the laws? People should be free to have a guest in their home, no matter who it is or under what circumstances. It's your home. We don't have enough freedom, it seems like, in our own home. You know, if we're taxed for breathing, what's next?
Well, and those are the challenges. You know, I think that there are so many people in the world, and then what happens here on Kauai is that it is so heavily marketed. I was learning all kinds of new phrases today, like an inelastic housing supply. I think that's what I had heard, that like there is no elasticity in our housing supply, that like when there is more demand, nothing comes in to fill that. And I had even a conversation. I had several conversations that were rather robust today and yesterday, and I spoke with somebody who comes over regularly. A person came over for a funeral that comes over from Oahu, and he was saying, wow, you know, he was really amazed that when he got off the plane in Kauai, he said he felt like he was in Oahu for how overwhelmed the baggage claim was, that it was so full and so clearly almost no one who lived here, then having traffic difficulties, even at 1 p.m. coming, and then we had attended a memorial in Hanalei, and it was, should have been a 20-minute drive. It was almost 40 minutes because of the rush hour traffic at, you know, 11 in the morning on a Saturday, you know, just to go down into Hanalei, not even coming back.
Yeah.
And then I spoke with somebody this morning who, this gets back to the food issue.
Yeah.
She cleans vacation rentals. And she was having a little meltdown over, no disrespect meant, if for some reason she's listening, but she was really got very vibrant in what she was saying. I thought, hey, you want to come on the radio? But then her worry would be that she would lose her job.
Yes.
But she talked about what it is to clean the vacation rentals and how the cleansers and all the chemicals that they use and the concentrations of them, they're mostly bought off the internet, and they're intense, and that they and they would get in trouble if they don't use them. But she knows it goes into a cesspool, and then or even a septic system, but that it is right above a nini in you know, these expensive places, and that she was giving the example that she was, said she was upsetting to see how the people on vacation, that they're really pretty much getting off the plane, going to Costco, buying these really big volumes of food, like a jumbo bottle of ketchup, and almost all of that just goes in the landfill. And I said, well, can't you take it home? And she says, like, sure, but can I manage 7 or 8 jumbo bottles of ketchup a week? No, I can't. And if she separates trash or does any of that kind of thing, that she, you know, they're on a strict timeline and they get paid by the hour, and if they do the things that take extra time, then they, you know, they get docked or they would lose their job. You know, they have a really tight schedule of how that goes. And you can't take that barely used food to the food banks because they have been opened. So, you know, she just said there's this huge amount of waste, just incredible amount of waste every time she cleans up a place.
I've seen that. I've visited friends who were visiting with groups of people or large families, and they go and buy huge amounts of food, and most of it is left behind. And I want to take it and give it to my friends, you know. And what can we do? How do we... can we form groups, go and, you know, put it out on the news or on bulletin boards or something. If you are a worker and can guide us to get this food, let us help you. Let us get rid of the food for you and put it to good use. You know, it's so horrible to waste food. How many people don't have food?
Right. Families, there's so a lot that don't, and particularly the people without a car. I know the people that are living with basically like a sleeping bag, and there's a lot of rain. And it's amazing that many of those people who are displaced like that don't have mental illness, don't have a secondary condition or an underlying condition that causes the reason that they are displaced. Many do. Many do have that. I mean, certainly are, you know, not exactly sidewalks, are bushes, you know, wherever can be what is accommodating that community. But it, people can be fully functional people, and once you lose your housing, it creates a cycle of poverty that is hard to overcome and be, quote, employable.
Yeah.
And ready
and
for
it gets
work.
Worse. It's spiraled down. You know, I started with a job in a house and had an accident and had a landlady get kind of
crazy with dementia, and suddenly I'm without a house and lost my job.
And I'm sorry.
It spirals out of control and seems to get worse. And now I have to think about where can I go, and I'm not going to be attacked. I'm not going to be surrounded by four big guys with their headlights blinding me in the night and bullying me and screaming and cursing at me. Get out of here. You can't sleep here. You know, where can I go? This used to be a peaceful island. And even if you wanted to have a weekend, some people just buy a camper and they want to go camping for the weekend. If they want to go somewhere off the grid, they're putting themselves in danger. And I'm not exaggerating.
I know. And then I did have, like, actually, just even this last week, I went to a one-year-old birthday party at Anini Beach. And the mother of the child is, like, 21. So it's a young family.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had their little spread of food. And several people who live at that beach who were, I would say, intimidating, looking for the collective of who was at the birthday party to really challenge. They came in and they ate all the food. They came in. There's three men and came in who got sort of friendly, but not that friendly, and they just mopped the food.
Wow.
And it was a little intimidating. I just didn't really get, I didn't feel like beefing with anybody, you know, so it was just like, huh.
Oh, man.
And,
wow.
You know, it's, so that's the other side of that coin.
Wow.
You know?
It just seems to be, I don't know, exponentially increasing and multiplying in ways that I never dreamed I'd see happening on this beautiful island. I've been here almost 50 years. And I can't, there are so many things that I don't recognize about Hawaii or living the life of being here in Hawaii.
I think it's happening, not just in Kauai or Hawaii though. I think it is almost a worldwide problem. We spend so much money on war and things that aren't needed. I've really started to like a statement that says live simply so that others can simply live.
Yeah.
We're a little bit out of balance. But I appreciate your calling in and sharing your experience. I want to say that I'm sorry for the difficulties that are in front of you.
I would just lastly say, please, folks, we're not criminals. Most of us are hardworking people who've had misfortunes. And we just want to be able to live. We want to live and let live and be left alone peacefully. Please try to understand. Thank you so much, Alicia.
You're welcome.
Aloha.
Aloha. We have another caller. Okay, and then I have, after we'll hear our other caller, and then I have a piece on that one I had spoken with my friend Kumukawai Iki that I recorded him instead of dragging her all the way down here. But I have some of her thoughts on that, too. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, this is Andy Saharnas. I called a little while ago, but I just want to be briefer this time. And, as far as the homeless reality in the world, you're correct. It's all over the world. But those of us who have seen Michael Moore's movie about, I forget what the title is, his latest movie.
About going to Europe when said, where to invade next, I believe what it's called.
Right. And so, you know, in much of Europe, in all the countries, or most of the countries portrayed in his flick, which it would be great if all the schools had their students watch it and discuss it.
Though, let me ask you this. Like, I watched it. I loved it. You know, he was going and invading. It's got some real unexpected plot twists, so I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't seen it, but it is doing a comparative of American policies and then European policies and a few other countries. I think he went to a Caribbean country and an African country. So he's looking at other ways of doing things. But I will say that when he went to Europe, he did somehow manage to bypass the very real challenge that they are having with this flood of immigrants that are coming from the war-ravaged countries. There are so many people coming out of Africa and the Mideast who have been bombed back to the Stone Age, you know, or they're facing slaughter. So it is overwhelming, the amount of refugees that have come into Europe, and he didn't address that. Like all the footage in there did not include that challenge.
Yeah, well that's like
talking about Kauai and not putting the visitor issue in.
Yeah, but I only say that's beyond the capacity of those countries to deal with.
It is, but I'm saying that was a big omission. If you were to say we need to be, you know, operating the way Italy and France and Finland are doing, that we didn't really have a full, honest look at those countries because those countries are overwhelmed. But they did show us wonderful policies that they have there.
Yeah, massive displacements of people like that, refugees. If they came to America, it would be difficult as well. But anyways, thank you for shedding light on that. And thank you
for all, I didn't mean to argue with you. Thank you for illustrating that there are more humanitarian policies that are happening in Europe, and we have the harsh contrast of what's happening, for example, with the American healthcare Act that's happening here, where they're looking to displace 22 million people from coverage, which for many of the types that are being displaced, that could mean, up into and including the end of their life. You know, it could cause the end of their life if they are denied needed health care. So that's when that film was made, we are even more extreme than at the time the film was made last year. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thank you, Felicia. Yeah. No, good health care is a right. And those people that have it, because their government has a sane policy about it because it works, the people feel they can relax so much more than the people here. Anyway, so this is a really great show, by the way, and continue the good work. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah.
So, Felicia, did you catch actually today about 3:00 in the afternoon on Eastern Time, the Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, decided to push off that vote on Trump Care until after the July 4th holiday, which some people speculate means it's dead. But
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Others are saying that Mitch McConnell still intends to bring it up for a vote, but in any case,
it's been deferred for a short period of time.
Yeah. They were at this point trying to get past a procedural vote, and even that was facing difficulty. In fact, our own Senator Mazie Hirono took to the floor of the Senate last night, among other Democrats, to try to simply delay any procedure vote on this.
To give her a shout out.
Yeah.
She has been relentlessly trying to get the drive out for the citizen community to raise their voice and sign resistance to that. I also want to give her a little bit of kudos that a couple weeks ago I played a piece on the the Defense Committee. It was a C-SPAN piece where we were hearing them talk about Pacific Missile Range facility and make investments here. And they were talking about how they can circumvent any environmental impact statement or public resistance. And I heard that raw for the first time when I played it. And I later listened further into the the show and, or not the show, the hearing. And Maisie Hirano asked pointed questions where it was clear that Kauai is not the best place for it to be.
Mm.
And I think that that was really important, and I was glad that she did that.
What were the reasons that came up for that?
I'll have to pull it up again.
Okay.
It's like that it's not ideal in terms of shooting down whatever it is that we need to shoot down. Just like Camera Kuhan Pak, who was on our show, she was saying that. Maisie was saying, you know, a few things to that effect, too.
Well, they did that.
It is. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. And guess what? You know what? We have a birthday party coming up.
Come help KKCR celebrate 20 years of broadcasting on Kauai on Saturday, August 19th at Lydgate Park Pavilion. We're having a big pa'ina featuring live music by Michael Keali, Lady Ipo, Shiloh Pa, and Gunga La Gunga. There'll be plenty ono grinds, silent auction, a bouncy house, games, and fun for the whole ohana. The whole community is invited, and everyone's encouraged to bring a KKCR birthday cake to share. So save the date, Kauai, Saturday, August 19th at Lydgate Park. Haoli la hanau, KKCR. See you there.
20 years on the air, community supported. Thank you, all of our donors who this last time helped us raise $75,000. That was wonderful, and it's an all-volunteer station.
Yeah, that's so exciting. It's going to be a great time. And I was just going to mention, Felicia, did you catch that? There was a test out of the Pacific Missile Range facility a few days ago or whatever.
I took a picture of it. It went up, and it failed.
Yeah.
But I talked to Vinnie Johnson, the commander.
Oh, you did?
Uh-huh.
You know, so many times you're like the right person to ask a question. I happened to talk to the commander. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Well, I did. And you know where I talked to the commander at? Just giving another shout-out to one of the things that went on this weekend. I went to the Night at the Museum is what they called the fundraiser for the Kauai Veterans Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much fun. It was looked like a MASH unit. It was basically playing on the MASH theme, and Vinny was there, and they really did a beautiful job. And it, you know, that's all private. That's not the government. It's people. It's private people, mostly veterans, trying to work to take care of the veterans. And so, you know, he bothered to come up and talk to me, and I talked to him, and we did mention that, you know, the missile launch, and I did invite him to come talk, and, you know, he's intending to come and do that on the show here at some point. He said, you know, I mean, we know that the last time they did it, it worked. He, basically said, they launched it. The other people who were hitting it down missed it. It wasn't actually, you know, our tight crew's fault for the miss. But that's why they test, right? If they knew they were going to hit it 100% of the time, they wouldn't need to test. So it was a fail.
Right. And you learn a lot from your failures, too. But did you ask him anything about the potential for an increased military presence here for turning PMRF into a defensive facility?
I didn't ask him that night, but I ask him regularly.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do, because I'll say, this is what I saw, this is what I heard, and I'm sure he's giving me a company line, you know, but he says right now they're just intending for that to be test. But there is a clear intention to be, you know, increasing the military funding and spending. And one of the calls I was half expecting to be getting is from the Kia'i, the protectors over there in the Mauna Kea area on Hawaii Island. Pohaku Loa, they continue to be bombing it, you know, and it is really devastating for the people who live there, because I just think, you know, we don't even get it. And that's the challenge, is that people don't worry about what doesn't impact them. And they don't even worry about what's going to impact them in the future. That's why they don't go to all the meetings. It's easier to let somebody else worry about it. But you have to go to the meetings, and you have to be proactive. That's like with something like this USDA grant. Maybe we could be proactive in a positive way, hopefully, maybe. But when you're actually living with the bombing, and that's one nice thing with social media, with like for me, that means Facebook. I have a lot of friends on Hawaii Island, and so you see them posting and complaining in the middle of the night, listening to the relentless bombing. They sleep to the sound of the bombing of their island. You know, it's nice to sleep to the sound of the waves on the beach.
Mm.
But the bombing of the island, that's kind of a problem. And before I play this piece that I recorded about displacement, we have so many good pieces from Kumu. I basically did almost like a whole show with her, but I'm going to just play this one piece. I want to talk about a show that I have coming up that I'm really honored to be having. We have, you know, I joke and say an inverse bell curve of normal people on this island. We have some really incredible people in all different kinds of directions. And one of them is a states person, some states people, and that are working on...
State employees, you mean?
No.
No.
Working statesmanship, diplomacy with other things. And so... In a couple of weeks, we'll be having a guest that is really worthy of Democracy Now. And we'll be talking about Russia and the strategy with Russia and how to not make mistakes. And
it sounds like you don't care to name that person
well,
at
I
this
can.
Moment.
I yeah. can, and I posted on my Facebook page, you know, an article. This is a magazine that I'm actually not that familiar with because it is kind of a top of the line states person publication that, you know, I can't pretend I never even heard of it before.
But there's an ambassador or assistant secretary of state.
The magazine is called To Deal with the Russia. I mean, it's called The National Interest. It's a foreign policy experts roundtable. So The National Interest is not a magazine that you would pick up at the grocery store line.
Right.
This is one that is read by foreign policy experts from various countries. And so the title of this article is a rather long article. It's called To Deal with the Russians, America Must Think Like the Russians. And so Bruce Allen, he will be in here, and Cynthia Lazaroff, she will be in here also. And they work in diplomacy directly with the other countries and with the core team from us. And just looking at the subtitle says, the risk of nuclear miscalculation is now higher than at any time since the Cuban Missile Crisis. There is a simple way to avoid it. And, you know, this storyline and this stuff will be, you know, on no doubt the major news networks, but... they're from our community here, so it's going to end up on KKCR soon. So I guess that, like, and with them, I'm going to listen a lot. You know, we'll be hearing what is out there. But these are people with very much firsthand information.
On the subject of Russia?
On the subject of Russia and on the subject of nuclear vulnerability, and not even necessarily Russia creating the problem. The problem is in miscommunication. And because there's not much communication between our countries, I don't want to be paraphrasing too much. I'd prefer for them to be able to phrase it, but how to deal with a third-party problem. And deal with it constructively. Why it's important to be working collaboratively and not be working like adversaries. Why it's important to have really good open lines of communication. And I have read through the article somewhat, but I would again prefer not to be pressed too deep into going into it because I want to allow them to be just be speaking about it. But it really looked about at what happened during the Reagan administration, and when we were, because he worked directly with Gorbachev at this time. He was somebody who was part of the perestroika movement, Bruce Allen. And in that window of time, deep in the Cold War, there was a whole layer that rallied around that helped to change the course of how that happened. And that the media were a big part of it, and the citizens were a big part of it. And right now, we don't have our eye on that ball. Right now, we're not looking carefully enough at that. We are looking at, a lot of times, distractive stories. And when we work on the internet, there's something called clickbait. And it might be correct to say that a lot of our media brings us into a mindset of clickbait, what is easy and quick to respond to, and we aren't thinking coherently enough. So we need to partner better and more responsibly, people, everybody, to not be, you know, like right now, like I watch some of my favorite comedians, and they love to overstate the problem. You know, and so when they overstate all this stuff about Russia with the election, and when there really isn't that much proof, you know, or there's all these different elements, like we're creating this, we're cultivating contention instead of going, okay, well, what are the real issues that we're facing?
You know, I got to tell you, if one gets their news primarily from comedians, I would expect there to be difficulties.
Or if one gets their news primarily from MSNBC or Fox or CNN, because those ones are worse than the comedians.
Is that right?
Yes, in my opinion. Like, you know, the comedians, they're at least not taking themselves that seriously. When you watch the news channels, they have such a profound spin that it is disturbing. But anyway, we're in a couple weeks, we're going to be having these core people on talking about it. And I don't want to inaccurately paraphrase them now. I just wanted to say, when we're talking about these issues, there are very real big issues. Normally, I speak just about what is going on in Kauai or Hawaii, and with a little bit of a look up to the weather eye of what's happening in the global world, but I know much more about what is happening here. So at the top of the hour, we're going to have John Gordon with Jazz with John. And right now, I would like to play a little piece with my friend Kumu Koiki, who shared so many good pieces. We pretty much did a whole show together on recording, and this is going to be the first piece that I've played on the air. I think I will play some other pieces in upcoming shows, because what she's sharing is really on point. And because of our caller at about half past the hour who was talking about living in the car, I want to talk about displacement. And that was something that's also there with what will be at this court case tomorrow with Coco Palms. So I am going to play this. Make sure I have it right. Doesn't sound like I do. Hold on. I've got John here, who is
this one.
Yep. John is very good with this, and I'm not really just a talker here.
So while you're doing
displacement of the Hawaiian people, I am seeing a lot of displacement, and you know, I see the DHHL eviction notice.
Right.
There's a lot. So there's a lot of that happening, and I'm even seeing, like in Wailua, there's an effort to move the DHHL, the Department of Hawaiian Homeland, to Hanapepe, so they can, for one of the things they want to do is to put the sewage treatment plant there. And I think, oh my goodness, you know,
yeah.
There is even like crapping on top of a promise.
Right. I mean, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, that they're crapping on our people. And it's true. I mean, Hawaiians, sadly, they're what you call that, when you talk about misplacement, I know exactly what you feel about misplacement.
Misplacement being,
I myself feel kind of displaced, you know. I mean, at one time, Hawaiians lived upon the land. The land was never to be owned. And then now people own the land. We can't pass through there for fishing, hunting, or whatever. But actually, I believe that our rights are protected and have been, what you call that, tested in the courts. So, and they've upholded that we have the right to go out in these places to practice our spiritual and religious practices. Yet many Hawaiians still live in terror and fear of doing that because people are going to look at us and go, oh, they're all pagans, they're all devil worshippers and so whatever. Even Hawaiian people will call us that. You know, as a kumuhula, a lot of times we have this kind of stigma about us that, oh, they believe in the Hawaiian gods and goddesses, or that we're doing rituals which are pagan.
It's all the same God, right?
I believe, right.
God loves all.
That's right.
The truth is written in all men's hearts.
Well, as a youngster, this was what I was told. You know, I went to Catholic school and all of that, very religious. We were born and baptized in the Catholic Church. And when we were young, they said that there was a line between Hawaiian spirituality and Christianity. For me, as I grew up, the line disappeared. There are no lines. Spirit knows no boundaries. There are no walls that can hold the spirit in or keep a spirit out. Nothing. That's why, you know, when you talk about spirit, the spirit is more powerful than us. We actually, as people, need the spirit to help us because we are unable to go here and there and so on. I believe if you pray and honor the spirits or the great spirit, then the great spirit is going to come and guide and protect you. If you ask for that guidance, that protection, then you're going to be guided and you're going to be protected. You're going to be provided for if you ask them to provide your means, the food and all of that. I mean, each and every day that I live, I give thanks and I ask for guidance. Not just for myself, but for all the world. Yeah, I actually love my enemies. I love my enemies. I can tell you straight out, you know, I love that it gives me a reason to pray. Yeah. When people are in disagreement with me, then I can pray for them. I feel good about that. It feels wonderful to have that power to sway people or to make people to act and feel a certain way. So that, and that certain way that I want people to act is with aloha. You know, aloha is my whole thing that I live for. You know, I live and die for that. Aloha. Oftentimes people misinterpret, misunderstand that word. You know, aloha is something that you give and take and it's shared. It doesn't dissipate. And once you give it, you can't take it back. Yeah. Because if you give, you just can't take it back. If you do take it back, then there was no aloha to begin with. Yeah. Because aloha can't be taken back. Is something given freely. Yeah. You can't have it back. Once you give aloha, well, you can have it back, but you know what I'm saying.
It get returned to you or reflected back.
Like I said, aloha aku, aloha mai. Hana ino aku, hana ino mai. Yeah, so if you give love, you can get love. If you hana ino or you do wrong, and then that's going to come back to you. It's come to haunt you. It's just like Buddhism, and what is that? They call the word karma. It's the same. It's the same thing. Yeah, and that's why I believe a lot of Hawaiians today are Buddhists. You'd be surprised that many Hawaiians feel really close to Buddhism and all of that. All religions, I believe, have the same wants, needs, and desires that the people want, need, and desire. Yeah. Religion wants you to reverence things. You know, if you desire things, then you pray for them. You know, everybody needs the same thing. We need clean air. We need clean water. We need land to grow our food. You know, land is here, but we can't go over there and plant our food. That's silly. When in the plantation days here, in between all of the fields that were growing, you know, people planted vegetables that could supplement your house to live at, you know. People go out, they go hunting, they go fishing, and they share their catch. Sharing your catch is really important, because if you act greedy or a little greedy, you know, you're not going to get nothing in the end. The more you share, the more you get.
Well, right now we're sitting here in an aquaponics palais at the charter school.
Yeah, Kula Aupuni Nihau Akahilani Aloha. This is our aquaponics. How fabulous. We got taro growing, watercraft, and we even got fish in the ponds here. You know, and it's amazing that, you know, this system was set up several years ago, and at first, we went through trials and tribulations, but I believe that our principal and the husband and the students have been caring for, monitoring this system, and it has been able to produce lots of food.
And so this is another example of elements that would be very good with the USDA type of grant, because when people are doing food production, like at the schools and different places. So that was Kumu Kuwaiike. We had discussed many different things about actually living with a disability, and houselessness and all kinds of challenges. And what I want to say about this Kumu, so graceful in the midst of all the challenges that she might be facing. Living life as if just with gratitude and not really with a challenge on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important to stay in a mind of gratitude even when we're working through challenges.
Yeah, and it's not always easy. I know that. And one of the pieces that we had talked about wasn't specifically for her. I had thought to play that today, was about when people do fall into depression, and sometimes it comes with suicidal thoughts, that we've had so much issue with that. That tends to be an outcome of this profound housing crisis.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think it's a profound issue. People feel so displaced. Actually, I deal with that discussion quite commonly with people, and also with, you know, I think the addiction challenge can happen with a problem like displacement. And so it's sort of an interesting thing, like we were talking about Cocoa Palms, and like I've been on that property, and, you know, it's amazingly clean. You know, everything is spick and span in the food prep areas. There's no odor, no smell, a lot of the area where there is like a few abandoned vehicles and stuff, they were there from before. You know, they've been in this process of trying to clean that place up. You know, there's some tarps and there's, you know, some things like that, but it's being managed quite well, and most everything is up on very cleanly and nicely up on pallets. So people can live rustically in a clean way. I know that, you and I were working with some topics about the parasites and, like, for example, the rat lungworm, and you were working to have this test done.
Right.
Did they get done yet?
No, actually, I was just on the phone before the show, with the Department of Health trying to track down those results. And actually, I got a call while we've been on the air. I wasn't able to pick it up. So hopefully we'll have that soon.
Because yeah. I want to bring that up next week. And like in talking to the Department of Health about things, you know, there are sometimes areas where the Department of Health needs to be called.
Hmm.
And very often in some of the most dire of conditions, it seems like it's difficult to get them to come.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are...
Is that because of shortage of staffing, do you suppose?
I'm not sure.
Or just a reluctance
It's a reluctance, and it's like, because I've got some issues with that, with the certain areas where we've seen some people have been sick, and there's another person who left in an ambulance last night, and... quite a lot of problems in a congested area. This is not any of the Hawaiian efforts. It is not that community at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there have been multiple calls to the Department of Health with no response. So, well, we are just about at the top of the hour. Jazz with John is coming up at 6 o'clock, and we have the County Council report, and it's a very full report, so we need to listen to that.
Great.
So thank you, Marshall. Thank you, callers.
And thank you, Felicia. Have a great night.
Okay, and here is the County Council report.
Aloha.
Aloha.